We've been hearing music here at the WFIU offices, and we don't fully understand how it's getting here. You'd think we would control all the music. We're the radio station. But ever since we've come back to the office, there's been this other music. Like a radio, but one we can't turn off. Like a radio, but from on high. Maybe more like the voice of God. These bells have been the soundtrack to our workday, and while it's nice to be important enough to have a soundtrack, like most kinds of fame and fortune, it does come with some complications.
Something that I think happens because you're hearing it in the background, it's part of your everyday existence, but you're not really trying, you're trying not to listen to it, but then...
This is my colleague, host of Earth Eats, Kate Young.
You start kind of picking up a melody. Is that that? Is it this? Is it that? You know, and then that's what makes it so distracting, is because the arrangements for the carillon are so different than they would be on guitar or something, that you're just struggling to figure out what it is that you're hearing, and that takes your mind away from your work.
And another thing is just, if I can go all acoustic and music theory nerdy on you.
Mark Chilla, host of Afterglow and Morning Edition in Bloomington.
It has to do with the bells themselves, because bells don't produce the same kind of tone as like a piano or a guitar would. You hear a lot of overtones with a bell, and a lot of those overtones ring very strongly. So when you hear a note, you're hearing a lot of overtones with that note. So the note itself is not always clear what pitch it is, which can get really confusing because you're trying to follow this melody, but you're hearing all these ringing overtones over it, and you're like, wait, where is the melody exactly? And then all of a sudden, you're not working anymore. You are focusing on the acoustics of bells in the middle of your workday, which, you know, is a nice distraction sometimes.
So I said there was a bit of a mystery here. It's not about where the bells are coming from. There's a tower about 350 feet from our windows. It's the Wells Metz Carillon. It was moved here from across campus in 2019 and unveiled at the beginning of 2020. That's what we do know. What we don't know is who's playing it or how it's played. How do they keep it going for hours and hours every weekday afternoon? We developed some theories.
One that I thought up until today was that it was all pre-recorded or like kind of like a player piano kind of thing where, you know, there was some sort of pre-programmed music that was going through the carillon, because we were hearing the same songs over and over and over again each and every day. So I thought maybe it's not a real live person. Maybe it's kind of like a player piano, but it's a player carillon instead.
That's what I thought, too. I mean, that's honestly, I think that's what I still think.
Mm-hmm.
My vote is still that it's a player piano, and there's a set number of songs, and they're programmed. That's what I think. Kate had a little more faith in musical humanity.
I think that it's a real person, and I think they're playing live. But what I don't know is, are they in the structure of the carillon with some mallets or something, you know, which is what I want to think, but I don't actually believe that. I think that they're somewhere else. I think they're in some room in Jacobs and they're playing.
That's the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music, just across campus.
But I think that they're students and that they're practicing. And I think that because I often hear the same song more than once in a session, and it feels like they're kind of working on it. And I also hear, like, we were just listening to America the Beautiful, and we heard quite a bit of hesitation between notes at times where they're, you know, they're practicing. It's not pre-programmed.
Okay, but so here's why I don't think it's someone practicing. Unless it's just one person practicing mm-hmm. all the time, I feel like there would be more repertoire.
Is there like a book? Is there a when you go inside the structure of the carillon and sit at the keyboard or grab the mallets or grab the ropes or what, however you play it, is there like a certain set of songs that you can only play, which includes Under the Boardwalk and summertime and Here Comes the Sun and Vincent by Don McLean and all the other songs that we've heard hundreds and hundreds of times, it seems, at this point.
Another colleague of ours heard something even more radio-worthy.
Violet says she heard some Britney Spears songs. It's a pretty wide range.
Yeah, it's a pretty wide range, which put a hole in my pre-programmed theory. And there were still more questions.
I don't quite know how a carillon works. Is it like a keyboard that you play, or is someone with mallets? Is it like kind of like a belfry where they're pulling on big ropes to play bells or something like that? I don't actually know. I wish I did know, especially because the carillon has become such an important, or at least integral part of my life each and every day as I am in the office. I have so many questions about it, and I really want to learn more about who programs it, who's playing it, how is it played, where is it played? These are all really good questions.
Yep.
All right. Well, it's a mystery. I am going to try to dig into it and get you some answers.
Please.
Dig into it, I did. The dark corners of the internet have a lot to say about carillons. Here's what I was able to find out. But let's just keep this between us. Carillons evolved from single-belled instruments. I guess those would just be called bells. They evolved from bells. In the Middle Ages, a bell on a tower told the time of day, and it could also send messages like fire, or we're being attacked, or there is a plague upon us. Everyone stay inside and wait for Zoom meetings to be invented. The time of day thing has continued. If you live near a big church or a university, you might be used to hearing the bells ring out the hour. At first, it was just that. They'd ring once for 1 o'clock, twice for two, and you know, so on. But pretty early on, people realized a heads up would be nice, so you'd know to start counting. So they established what's called the four strike, and they added more bells so that four strike could be a melody. Now we get four strikes every quarter hour, building up to four strikes on the hour, and then the count. This was all happening in a very particular part of the world. In the 16th century, the Netherlands and Belgium were like Silicon Valley in the late 1990s. Money was flowing in, and everyone wanted a carillon bigger than the next towns. And then the tables turned. After the French Revolution, there was a copper shortage, and the sound of the bells was no longer their most appealing quality. People dismantled carillons all over the place. And then grandfather clocks and pocket watches undercut carillon's monopoly on the time. At this point, the mid-19th century, things weren't looking so good for the blue whale of musical instruments. But things changed again in the 1880s, because by then, bell makers had developed ways to tune the bells more precisely, and that made people want to have carillon concerts. The first was in 1892, and it put the instrument on the map as a soloist rather than just background sound. Although, I don't know, that distinction still seems a little fuzzy.
I often like to think of it that the carillon is part of the soundscape of a city. So here at the Mets, we're part of IU's soundscape, along with the sirens and the birds and people walking around outside. And that's a really unique honor, I think, that carillon performers have.
The carillon is a very public instrument. If you're in the vicinity and it's playing, you're going to hear it. At the same time, carillon performers are pretty anonymous. It took me some work to find one. I had to try multiple search terms. But I did eventually track down the person I needed, Linley Wang.
I'm the current carillon associate instructor and also university carillonist here at Indiana University, and I have the joy of ringing the Mets carillon.
We met up at the base of the carillon. And before anything else, I had to get some answers to Kate and Mark.
I'm very curious.
Well, here you go. Is there a person inside always, or is it like a player piano kind of thing where it's somehow programmed?
Usually it's going to be a person, but we also have an automatic mechanism.
When it's a real person, are they actually in the carillon, or is it somehow controlled remotely?
You have to be up there. Everything is mechanical.
Is it a keyboard? Is it mallets? Are you pulling ropes?
We actually sit at a playing console that has both a manual keyboard for your hands and also a pedal compass.
Who's generally playing? Is it students? Is it always you?
Not always me. I do have minions, and they are the students of the IU Carillon Studio.
For a long time, we're hearing things like Under the Boardwalk, Here Comes the Sun, Don McLean's Vincent, mm-hmm. as well as seasonally themed things. But I would think if it was students, they would be playing a variety of, I mean, a wider variety, and there wouldn't be quite as much repetition.
So you're probably hearing the same student come back and again at the same time practicing their set of repertoire, which is why you hear repeated music. Every student has, you know, their own little niche of music that they tend to like best.
Who decides what gets played?
Well, at first, I assign some music just so that they can nail down the technique, but after that, the world is your oyster.
Gotcha.
So I'm amazed to hear that they're actually up in the tower.
Yeah.
They are actually up in the tower. Yeah. It's a pretty cool space, actually. I got to go up there. She took me up. And the console looks like a piano and an organ got together and had Pinocchio as a baby.
I have to say that it does make me feel better.
Yeah.
It makes me feel better knowing that someone, a human being who's interested in Carillon, is learning to play this somewhat rare instrument or something, you know, and that's who's choosing the music, and they're choosing it for their own exploration.
But also for our enjoyment as well, you know, because it's such a public instrument. So there's something nice about that rather than just like, oh, we'll just put on something in the background. Let's press play on an automated thing or, you know, so there's something nice about that.
Yeah, it's kind of like radio, except with the radio, you can turn it off and on at your
will.
Leisure.
Yes. Yeah.
And that, of course, is the crux of the situation. That was the thing I had really called Lindley to talk about. And it was also the thing that I was most nervous about asking. So I put it off. Signed up for the tour instead.
I love doing tours. I love bringing people up into the tower.
There's a door at the base of the Carillon. Lindley unlocked it and led me up a flight of stairs.
In we go. Before I let you in, I'm going to have you look up because you can actually see our bells.
Wow.
If you step carefully over here so you don't go down our steps,
right,
you'll see our baby bells are actually right above the playing cabin. Yeah. And if you look straight up, you'll actually see one of our largest bells.
Wow.
All right. And then I'll let you into our playing cabin.
Okay.
Come on in.
We were in a small climate-controlled room with a bench and a playing console. Instead of keys, there were two rows of what looked like the ends of broomsticks. You play them by pushing down with your fists. There are also pedals for your feet. Each of the broomsticks and pedals uses metal rods and levers to connect to a clapper way up in the bell. So you press down on the broomstick, it's actually called a baton, and that makes the clapper hit the bell. Remember how Mark said bells have a lot of overtones? They ring a main note, but lots of other notes come floating through too. That also explains why a lot of the music sounds just a little off. It's not just that it's weird to hear a Britney Spears song from a bell tower. It's also about those overtones.
For classically trained musicians, they often are very distracted sometimes by the music of the Carillon, like confused. And it's because the Carillon has a very strong minor third overtone, whereas in Western classical music tradition, it's usually major third overtone. So for example, if I play something major sounding, it almost feels like you've bitten into a lemon. It's got a little bit of a twinge. But if I play a minor third, it feels very comfortable, like you could slide right into the water and stay there for a little bit. It feels really nice.
Lindley played some music for me. I'm going to play you a sample, and I want you to pay attention to all the extra noise. I was recording in the playing cabin, so you hear all the mechanics. The Carillon's made to be listened to outside. Also, you won't be able to hear this, but Lindley was getting a workout. It's so physical.
It is definitely very physical. And it's because you're moving literally tons of heavy metal. It is not, you know, it's not like a little violin we're playing up here. It's like, it's a really big instrument.
Yeah. It's got 65 bells. Four of those were added in the renovation, and they have quotes from famous women poets inscribed on them. The biggest bell is 6 feet wide, over 6 tons. And just to be clear, those batons and pedals move clappers that hit the bells. The bells themselves are stationary. Okay, so I'd gotten a sense of the situation, but I still hadn't gotten an answer to the crucial question. It had been almost an hour. If I was going to do it, now was the time.
Like, it's... it can be a little challenging.
The listening or the playing?
the listening. I mean, not when I'm like this. Like, this was lovely, and you know, it would have been nice to hear it outside where it was like the bells were more clear and stuff. But you know, like when you're working, you know, do you like listen to music when you're working?
I don't, but I know my brother is probably Spotify's best customer, so he listens a lot.
Right.
And I know people have differing opinions on listening to music while they work, and it is tricky. I know what you're kind of getting at.
Yeah, right.
It's like, how do we balance, you know, making music versus possibly making noise? And it's a really tricky question. All carillons navigate this question differently. Here at IU, since the tower is so new and we started during COVID, I think we were given a lot of freedom in terms of ringing the bells. No one was really on campus. We also wanted to raise awareness, so more was better at the beginning.
Inley loves the carillon. She even wrote a children's book about all the bells on campus. It's about a squirrel looking for the Wells Metz carillon. It's called Is This My Home? Clearly, Lindley wants the rest of us to love the carillon too. And she recognizes that too much of a good thing is no longer a good thing.
I think as the carillon enters into a new stage of life where people know more about it and we want the carillon to continue to be a thing of joy for the campus, I think the next step is probably instilling weekly or daily ring times where the carillon only rings for a couple of hours and most of the practice is being done elsewhere.
Lindley left Indiana University the week after we talked. I don't think it had to do with me. She said something about finishing grad school. Anyway, since then, the carillon's been much quieter. Her students must be taking a break, too. I imagine they'll start playing again once the new semester starts. I'm feeling more okay with that. Lindley's enthusiasm rubbed off a bit. And look, I understand. Even if your job doesn't involve adjusting sound all day, like ours do in the radio station, you also might not want to listen to music as you work. That's legit. But I don't know, it was hard staying home for a year and a half. It's kind of nice to know there's a real person up there, ringing out the bells to say, hey, the pandemic's still on, but you can come outside. Be around other people again. For WFIU Arts, I'm Alex Chambers. This story originally aired on the August 21st episode of Inner States. For more stories like this, find Inner States on a podcast app near you.